This episode of DLC is brought to you by Alienware. So I got a question for you. You're a gamer. Are you seriously going to miss out on Alienware's biggest gaming sale of the year? I mean, these are Cyber Monday prices we're talking about. So it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware, with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level, with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it during Cyber Monday. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories, like Alienware 32 4K QD OLED gaming monitors for ultimate visual fidelity. These really are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance. So I'd visit Alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before the lowest prices of the year go dark.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Oh, the bass is thumping and we're ready. That means it's time for another DLC. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, oh, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC. If you're using this as your motivation for a run or a workout, we're so excited. Are you one of our geeks and sneaks? You can do it. We're going to be with you for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be. And that's completely free, thanks to our sponsor this week, Lynda. Oh, Lynda! They made that possible, bringing DLC to you. DLC, of course, the show all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. And also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata. That's spelled with two N's and one T. And I'm joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis... the guy who has yet to score a single goal in the World Cup final, let alone three, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hey, Christian.
I was robbed. I was really close. I got naked. I ran out onto the field. I kicked
That's not how you do it. You know, that's not the usual process is to first get naked and run out on the field.
Well, you know, I figured, right? You know, I it felt right. So sue me.
Oh, man. Did you have a good fourth?
Yeah, it was good. It was very relaxing. We went to a parade with the little ones, and I don't know. It's all a blur, dude. With an infant, it's all a blur. I saw you had some America going on, and hopefully you had a fun one.
Yeah, it was a good time. But we are back in it, talking video games, back with another DLC. And, you know, everybody always asks me, what does DLC stand for? Of course, it's your downloadable Kanata. It's your downloadable Christian. But this week, we're excited because DLC stands for Designing Listenable Chaos, because we have one of the guys responsible for creating the incredible soundscapes that make up the worlds of Uncharted and The Last of Us. We have the senior sound designer at Naughty Dog, our friend, Mr. Robert Krekel. Hey, Rob.
Hey, guys. I'm so excited to be here. I freaking love DLC, and I'm very honored to have my own now DLC that is just for me.
Yes, indeed. We're excited to have you, man. Been wanting to have you on for a while. You are, as I said, the senior sound designer for Naughty Dog. Before we get to any other part of the show, What is that job? I'm curious. I think a lot of people misunderstand what a sound designer does on a video game because, you know, you have to create and design all the sounds. But what goes into – what is your day-to-day job activity?
Oh, man. Day-to-day is extremely varied. So just the other day, we were actually out recording a bullwhip cracks out in the wilderness and in a Foley stage, as well as like out in the parking lot. And we're basically using those whip cracks for various things like elements of punches or the actual reflections might be used as a impulse response for reverb, or it's kind of a weird job because that's one day. And then the next day is actually sitting down and, you know, designing sounds, designing the worlds that, that Drake and the other characters inhabit. And then, you know, another day is going out and recording a Jeep for, I'm sure you guys have all seen the E3 demo by now. That sure. Jeep was freshly recorded and mixed and mastered and then implemented so that, you know, it responds the way you'd expect to the player. So, yeah, it's a pretty interesting job. There's lots of different things to do day to day.
So what I imagine there's a lot of Jeeps that have been recorded audibly in the history of filmmaking and video game making. Why do you guys have to go out and record your own Jeep?
That's a good question. And it's because of the way video games work, right? Like most Jeeps that have been recorded ever, most, not all, but have been recorded probably for a film. And so they're recorded in a way that makes sense for film. So drive-bys or incoming and outgoing and stopping and that sort of thing. And it's sort of based on like looking at it from afar versus in a video game where a player has control over it. So we have to record it in a very specific way where we're recording it so that we can basically slice up the cycles of the engine and recombine them dynamically based on like how much gas is the player giving, how much brake is the player giving, is it onload, is it offload. We have to record it in a very specific way in order to like have the information that the game gives us from the player play back through the speakers what you'd expect.
It's an incredible job when you compare it to being some sort of sound engineer on a film, because as you're describing, you have all of the information in the film of where the camera sits, where the listener is supposed to be. But in a video game, you don't know moment to moment where the player is going to be necessarily. And all of that information has to be there. If they go into one little corner of the world, it's got to be correct. You know, the audio has to be correct, right? So you're building a world of sound just like the level designers are building a world of visuals, right?
Very, very much so. Yeah. I mean, we have to build up every nook and cranny, with sound that makes sense. So we don't break, the immersion of the player. And, I think sound is almost best when you don't notice it. There are moments, right, when it's cool to have awesome sound that shines. But I think the real accomplishment comes when everything just sort of feels right. And you don't really question it.
So in every episode of DLC, me going, "Damn it, Nate, you haven't used any of those yet."
In every episode?
I do that in every episode. Sometimes you have to, string it together. I don't want to make Rob's job too easy. So sometimes I say like, "Dang," and then sometimes I say I was playing with the catcher's mitt. It's all there though.
You just got to stitch it together. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Richard might be a little upset if we dubbed in somebody else.
No. We talked. We're cool.
I have another question based on something you said. So you were recording a whip cracking, not because there's a whip in the game, but because you want to use an element of that sound. Now, how do you know that a whip crack is the sound you need to make a better punch? Like what goes into that decision? Like, should we use a whip crack? Should we use a breaking crate? Should we throw glass against the wall? Like how do you compose sounds out of other sounds?
Well, the whip in particular is more of like an homage to Indiana Jones. I mean, the whole game is sort of an homage to Indy in a way. And, Ben Burtt, the famous sound designer who worked on Star Wars and Indiana Jones, among many other amazingly sounding films, he used a whip crack as an element to the punches in Indy. And so, my buddy and I here, we're very nerdy when it comes to sounds and we like dissecting sounds and figuring out how things were done. And so oftentimes we like to try to recreate things or record them on our own and see what, you know, what magic kind of comes out of it. And, you know, we had the intention of recording this whip for Punch Elements, but it ended up, while we were recording it, as a happy accident, we were doing it outside, and the reverb of the space, the echo, if you will, of the space we were in was really, really cool. And there's this process called convolution that allows you to use sort of an impulse, and a whip crack is sort of a perfect impulse because it's a small sonic boom. And it allows you to take the way the whip crack sounded in a space and apply it to like another sound, like a voice or a gunshot. And then all of a sudden that voice or that gunshot sounds like it's in the same place that the whip was cracked. And so that was like our happy accident. And it actually, it's going to sound really cool once we're done with it.
That's awesome. There's a cool question here in the chat room from Tondagosa, who says, what's the weirdest thing you've ever used to create a sound?
Oh, man. So many weird things. probably dog food, maybe. Dog food, a can of dog food in particular, Alpo. There's some kind of weird quality, and this was not for Uncharted. This was way back when I worked at SOE for a creature. There's some kind of weird quality of a can and the sort of sucking sound as you turn it upside down and the dog food falls out. It's pretty disgusting, but it works pretty well for like weird creature vocalizations.
That's pretty awesome. That sounds crazy. It just sounds like a fascinating job to me. Also, you know, last week, my story of the week was talking about how everybody should take a look at the extended E3 trailer for Uncharted 4, which came out this week. And I hope people have checked it out. I understand if people want to remain unsullied and not see it, I give you a thumbs up, but boy, is it ever impressive. Can you talk a little bit about what went into making that trailer on your end? I mean, how we see this incredible run of, you know, this Jeep chase that leads into this other incredible chase. But something you were talking to me about at E3 was that there's a lot of dynamic elements happening in that trailer. There's a lot of choices that you can make. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, kind of goes back to the point we were talking about before. We're building out worlds, and that whole chase sequence, though it was played similarly each time, is like, it's wide linear, right? That's sort of what we're doing now. And there, we have to build out sound for all of those destructible things that you could possibly ram into with the Jeep. So no matter which path you take with the Jeep, the stuff that Drake runs into or not needs to be able to make sound. And there's just, I mean, you guys, if you've seen the video, if not, there's just market tables and baskets and fruit and pottery and all sorts of just detritus that you can interact with in the Jeep. And we had to make sounds for every single thing there. A big thing for us, you know, my audio director, Phil Kovats, and I are really detail focused. That's sort of what next gen audio is for us. It's just bringing another level of detail. So everything just sounds like it should and feels right. And so we really spent a ton of time just focusing in on all the small little details that you could possibly interact with during that sequence.
It's so amazing, man. And it's one of those jobs where the better you do it, the less people notice it, right? Because it just seems like the way it should be. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
All right. Fascinating stuff. We're excited to have you on for the whole show. And we will get right to our opening segment, which is Story of the Week.
Story of the week, it's the story of the week. Story of the week, it's the story of the week.
Story of the week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. And you can always submit stories for our consideration using our hashtag, that's DLCSOTW for Story of the Week, or by using our subreddit over at 5x5dlc.reddit.com. Also, we're doing something new this week. I talked about incorporating more direct listener correspondence into DLC, and we had some great response over at our Gmail account. That's dlcfeedback@gmail.com. And we're going to incorporate some of your comments, some of the emails we got right into Story of the Week. And we're also going to do a Q&A section. So continue to send in your comments if you know about a story that's big in the coming week and you want to have some input into our discussion. You can always send that to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right, Rob, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What do you consider your story of the week?
You know, I'm split between two things. Something that I really, really want to happen, and another thing that I really hope is sort of renaissance. I'll go with the Nintendo NX coming soon. I guess the story is that there's rumor that the Taiwanese supplier Foxconn has been given a go-ahead for pilot production on the NX, and I'm really excited about NX because I just want it. It's the same excitement I get about every Nintendo console. I want it to be so much more than it's probably going to be. I want it to like bring me back to my love for Nintendo in the late 80s, early 90s, that like they were just, they could not be stopped. They could not be topped. And every time a new console get announced from them, I really hope that sort of brings them back to that.
Yeah, it's the rumor is that because this timetable of gearing up for a pilot program is happening now, that Nintendo may be launching the NX, which is the codename for their next console, as early as next July. So 1 year from today, we may be thinking about buying a new Nintendo console. Now, of course, the Wii U has been, by all accounts, pretty underwhelming in terms of sales. It has not performed the way Nintendo expected it to. So what do you guys think about moving on to a new console this quickly? Rob, sounds like you're ready to do it. Do you have a Wii U?
You know, the Wii U is the first Nintendo console, aside from their handhelds, that I did not purchase. And it makes me sad.
Oh, you're ready.
It makes me really sad. So yes, I am definitely ready.
Christian, what's your take on NX maybe coming out a year from now?
It's a difficult thing to wrap your head around, I think, because part of me, the Rob in me, is excited and gets excited about, you know, this Nintendo, this image of Nintendo that I perhaps unfairly have created of them or for them based on their past successes and what I want them to be. And if I ruled the world, what I would have the company be. And then there's the, you know, what have you done for me lately? Maybe that's the Christian in me. that kind of looks at their track record and what they've done recently. And, you know, kind of my long stated belief on this show that many of Nintendo's successes, aside from their games, are happy accidents in terms of console space and successes they've had and whatever. But I think if you're a fan of the company, it's hard not to root for something awesome coming out soon. I think if you just recently purchased a Wii U, it's kind of hard to be too upset that a new system might be coming out soon, because at this point, anyone buying a Wii U is kind of going in with the full knowledge that this thing isn't going to be the console leader of this generation, right? You're buying it. Like when I bought mine, I bought it because there were six games that I wanted to play that were awesome games, and that justified the purchase to me. So, I mean, I feel like this isn't like you bought an iPhone 1, the 4-gig iPhone 1 on launch day, and then what, 3 months later, they discontinued that model and dropped the price? Like, we're not in that territory. So I think it's all good. I hope that the NX is awesome and amazing and is everything that everyone wants it to be. I mean, Jeff, I feel like you have to be excited about this because you get excited about, I could just put... you know, throw some electronics together, put tape on it, and call it new and shiny, and I think you might buy it.
Wait, can I pre-order it?
Well, it's VR, so yeah.
Oh, good. No, I'm not that gullible. I find it odd. I guess it makes sense if they're, you know, if they didn't get what they wanted out of Wii U as far as consumer reaction and consumer acceptance of that console. I guess it's smart to move on and just push forward and try to create something new. I'm worried that this thing is going to exist in this weird nether space of where does it fit technologically among the consoles that are already out and the console that it has that's already out. I mean, is this thing going to be much more powerful than the Wii U was? Is it? I think it definitely explains E3 from Nintendo's perspective as far as how few things were announced and shown for the Wii U. It feels like, yeah, we're not showing Zelda because it's not going to be that anymore. It's going to be this thing for this new console. And so forget all the stuff we showed you before because it's going to be different now. We're updating it for this new console. And probably every other game that wasn't close to being done, like, you know, Yoshi and some of those other games and Mario Maker, every other game was now pushed to this new place. If it's really going to be that soon, it's an interesting strategic position. We got a really cool email about this from a listener, Nick, who has some ideas about what the NX could be. I'd love to hear what you guys think about his ideas and maybe what your ideas for what you would want out of a next Nintendo console. But he sees a lot of potential with Nintendo putting out an NX that he looks at as the first all-digital console. So his vision for what NX would be is that it scraps a physical medium entirely. It's all digital distributed, and that it is really just the gamepad. It's kind of the Wii U gamepad as a console with a simple little dongle that plugs into your TV to stream 1080p video to your television. But the console itself is indistinguishable from a handheld, and it becomes both Nintendo's new handheld and their new console, and that you could plug it into your TV using the dongle and play games like you would on Wii U, either on the television or on the pad, but you could also take it with you and it's completely portable, so it doesn't actually need a physical console to work. And his idea, his concept for this is that it's backwards compatible at launch with Wii U, so that you have all these Wii U titles, so that people like Rob, who skipped this generation, have access to the great games that were on Wii U. And that 3DS and new 3DS games are also compatible with it. And that it's got enough horsepower to be both the new big console and the new handheld console at the same time. And it's all downloadable. If you had a physical copy of a Wii U game, you get credit to be able to download the digital version onto this new console. What do you guys make of that? That concept for NX. Do you think that's a compelling idea? What do you think, Rob?
I mean, that's certainly an idea that's been floated around a lot before. I have a hard time believing you're going to get like a comparable gameplay experience or visual fidelity experience from a handheld at this point. I don't know that you're going to get like 1080p60 out of a handheld streamed over a dongle. That being said, I think it's a cool idea. Like, you know, there was like a very kind of crappy Neo Geo knockoff, or not knockoff. It was like a real deal, but it got pulled from shelves a while ago. That was actually a handheld, which you like plugged into a base station, which then fed it HDMI out to your television. And that's sort of the idea of this. And I wonder about battery life for something like that. You know, how portable is it actually? Because we all know, like, the Wii gamepad is not. its battery life is pretty poor. I don't know, man. I don't know. It's hard to say.
What do you think, Christian? Do you think that the whatever the NX is, it needs to compete with PS4 and Xbox One in terms of power? Or do you think it needs to create its own world, like listener Nick is talking about, and kind of creating this hybrid portable space?
It depends what it wants to be, or what Nintendo wants it to be, or if they know what they want it to be. If they want easy third-party games on their system, it needs to be power or graphically fidelity-wise comparable with the Xbox One and the PS4. If they don't care about that and it's just going to be the Nintendo machine, or it's so unique or so widespread, right? That's the other way that you get third-party games, is that everybody has it, like the 3DS. Those aren't ports from the Xbox 360 or whatever. Those are unique games for that system made by third parties. It needs to be a really big seller. I don't know if they can pull off those huge of numbers. I do think a handheld slash home system consolidated approach is a smart way to go. I mean, for instance, with this last gen or this current gen where you have Smash for 3DS and Smash for Wii U, imagine if there was one console that was both of those things, and you only bought one copy of Smash and it was both of those, you had it forever. I think that console would have been a much bigger seller, and, you know, obviously the game would have sold gangbusters. I think Rob brought up the most of the problems that this idea currently has is the graphical fidelity, being able to be streamed at a competent frame rate, also the battery life. And then I don't think Nintendo is future looking enough in terms of the digital age to go the PSP Go route and have it be, you know, downloadable only. I think they keep showing their ties to Best Buy for whatever reason. They really still believe in Best Buy. It seems like every product launch or demo station, they have a Best Buy kiosk that they tout. That's where the World Championships were. I think they believe in physical media of some form or fashion. And I would not expect Nintendo to give me credit for disc-based games that I currently own. I mean, it's great, right? That's like, that's the dream somehow. But I wouldn't expect that from them. I think what this shows, though, is that pretty much every gamer roots for Nintendo. The problem is every gamer has a different opinion of what Nintendo succeeding is. And that might be Nintendo's biggest hurdle to overcome is, what are we to the most people and how do we make them happy while still doing what we want to do? I mean, Jeff, is this something that you would take with you if it was this hybrid portable handheld home system? Does this, you know, reinvigorate you for Nintendo? And would this be a thing that you would carry in your satchel with you when you went places?
It's not really my solution looking for a problem. You know what I mean? I feel like I don't have that use case that I'm looking to solve as far as, oh man, wouldn't it be great if I could just take Mario Kart from the Wii U with me as I go? I mean, that's kind of cool, but that's just not how I game generally. So I'm much more interested in them coming out with a console that can play with the big boys power-wise, because that's kind of what gets me excited is the pushing forward technologically. Some interesting comments in the chat, though. Wizard of Video Game said if it had actual NES, SNES, N64 cartridge ports, people might pass out. I think that's a funny idea.
Yeah, from carrying the weight of the thing.
Right. And a lot of people are talking about Amiibo. You know, certainly Amiibo is the bright spot for Nintendo right now. You know, maybe they'll just have the it's a console, but there's like 50 different varieties of the console that are shaped like different Mario characters. So you can buy the console in so many different varieties. anyway, it's going to be interesting if it's really on this kind of a pace to come out that fast. I think we're going to start to get a lot of information very quickly. And in fact, I'm surprised that they didn't have more information at E3. Although Nintendo's on a new kind of calendar now. They have these Nintendo Directs, so they're not tied to any kind of specific industry events to get news out. So they can announce things whenever they want. It'll be interesting. It's going to be interesting. Christian, what is your story of the week?
So it's another rumor patrol. There's a thread burning up the charts over on NeoGAF about it, but the rumor is that the Warner Brother Games Montreal, they did Arkham Origins. They were the developer behind that. And also, I believe they're the developers of the upcoming Batgirl DLC for Arkham Knight. But the rumor is that they are working on a Superman game. And there's a air quote screenshot and off screen video of that same basic character screen, which, you know, it has a 3D model of Superman and then it says his name and it says some of his stats. And people talking on NeoGAF, and I think kind of the first thought is this type of character screen looks a little too much information givey to be a Superman game. Like, why are you telling me his weakness is kryptonite? His name is Kal-El. It seems more like something that would be found in a JLA, a Justice League game, or a fighter where you have a bunch of characters. But the main reason I bring it up and what makes it fun is in Arkham Knight, there are little teases of a larger world, right? The teasers to references to kind of Flash existing, Superman existing, all this kind of background chatter you can pick up. That I think is cool because it makes the world more real and lived in. But I love trying to pitch the perfect Superman game. So I ask you, Rob, and you, Jeff, if you were working on this game and it was real, how do you do it? How do you make Superman? Rob, we'll start with you. How do you make Superman the game work? What is it?
Well, it starts with sound, right, Rob?
Yes. The speed of sound. No. I this was almost my story of the week because I would just be excited for a Arkham-like Superman game. So I think you keep some semblance of that flow combat. I think that's building block number one. I think the hardest part of this is the story and giving him like a problem, but Hire Max Landis. He's got some pretty awesome Superman ideas. So maybe he would be able to come up with some good motivation for him in a game.
I have the perfect pitch, guys. I have the perfect pitch. You ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
This is the perfect Superman game. You ready?
Yeah.
You take the Just Cause 3 engine and you take out all the guns. You skin it with a far-off futuristic sci-fi planet that Superman is going to fight Brainiac on, and you have the exact same destructibility and chaos and playground, except you can fly. You don't have to hop on a jet like in Just Cause. You can just fly anywhere you want. You map laser eyes to right trigger, freeze breath to left trigger. You got your X button, your A button jumps, and then hold it down. You fly, and you fly as long as you want. Punch, 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 breaking stuff. There's no guns in the game. You are just this giant playground, beating up bad guys, taking down big amounts of this alien futuristic sci-fi world. I'll buy that in a heartbeat. Give it to me now.
So there's that. How you're solving the problem is you're getting him onto an alien planet where these bad guys are suddenly, for some reason, powerful enough to fight him, or he's far enough away from the sun that he is a little bit weaker.
Yes, it's not Earth. I want to have destructibility of environments. I don't want to have to worry about the Man of Steel problem of destroying Metropolis. I don't want this game to be set in Metropolis. I don't want it even to be set on Earth. I want Superman to be going to some far-flung, crazy, awesome sci-fi, sort of gleaming silver white world.
Where his dad flies on a dragon?
Yeah, that world, except his dad's not there. You know, it's not Krypton, but it's, you know, it's some crazy, cool sci-fi planet where there's crazy aliens. And but I'm able to destroy everything because I'm supremely awesome and overpowered. And it just makes me – it's like Just Cause. It makes me feel overpowered all the time like Superman is.
Okay. I may have mentioned this before. I think if you've looked at the screenshot, my guess as to what that is that it's an iOS game coming out around the time of Batman versus Superman. Just a guess. Kind of one of those brawl fighting games they've been doing. Just a guess. If it's anything at all. But my Superman game, you are, and they've done this kind of before, but what I think makes Superman interesting is that he can't be everywhere at once. And I want a real open world, not an open city, which I know is I'm asking a lot, but then it's, he can hear things everywhere. So as you choose to save a school bus full of kids from going into a river, a bank is being robbed. And it's this game of, it's kind of like Go to some extent. It's a power struggle between Lex Luthor or whomever and what he's able to take over in the city and what you're able to solve and help and how you're helping people and then morale within the city.
It's just a game that constantly makes you feel terrible. It's like, you stopped the bank robbery, but that school bus of children fell off a cliff. Sorry, bud.
That's how you defeat Superman.
Sorry, Superman.
You make him
feel terrible.
Yes, you make him quit. You can't beat him physically. You need to ruin him emotionally. Do you watch Scandal? You need to wreck people. That's the Superman game.
I think that game is Rob Kreckel's worst nightmare because it's like this massive cacophony of sounds that you have to focus in on one to with your super hearing.
Well, in a way, that's already Arkham Knight, right? You drive around that city and it's just constantly yelling at you. So
that's true.
Yeah. Jeff, awesome. What's your story of the week?
I'm going with a board game story of the week, which I don't do very often, but this was a big week in board games because the most prestigious award in all of board gaming was awarded this week. It's the Spiel des Jahres, which is a German board gaming award that's been around decades, and the Germans are the people that sort of started designer board games, which are the board games that I like the most. And this is a huge, huge award among the board gaming community. Having the Spiel des Jahres on your box automatically sells many more copies than it would normally. And they have a breakdown of three different divisions for the Spiel des Jahres. There's the regular main award, the Spiel des Jahres, which means Game of the Year. And there's the Kennerspiel and the Kinderspiel. Kennerspiel is more sort of gamer games. They're more complicated. They're a little more intense games for enthusiasts. And then the Kinderspiel is for kids. But in the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, the main Spiel des Jahres has been definitely focused on more gateway games, more games that are playable for a much wider audience of people. They're not those really intense, very, you know, demanding, huge rule book games. That's usually more reserved for the Kennerspiel. So anyway, so they don't nominate very many games. There's usually only a handful of nominees. And this year the nominees were Machi Koro, a game called The Game, which is a bizarre nominee in my opinion. Very dry number card game.
Good movie.
And
though.
Then the
Good movie.
Yeah, it's a game where they take you and they drop you in the middle of the desert and you have to find your way home. And then the winner, which was just announced, is a game called Colt Express, which is just delightful. So the idea of this game is it's a fully three-dimensional, you put it together like almost like Lego, but it's all made out of cardboard and, you know, punch cards. And you put it together this train. It's a full-on multi-car train car that you have little people in, and they can be inside the train or on top of the train, and you're doing like a cool Western movie train heist where you're planning your moves of your guys. You're trying to swipe the loot that's in the train. It's transporting diamonds and gold, and you're trying to grab them and not get caught by the sheriff, and then take your loot to different parts of the train by jumping on the top, and it's all sort of programmable movement. So everybody puts down their moves in sequence without knowing what everybody else is putting down, and then you flip them all over, and then you see what happens. And you can, like, punch people and knock them off the train, and it's just delightful and amazing, and I think a really cool winner for the game, for the award, because it's such a unique and visually stunning game. I mean, it's really unlike anything else you've ever seen in a board game, because it looks more like one of those 3D jigsaw puzzles than a board game. But it plays like a board game, so it's actually kind of like a mix between a miniatures game and a designer board game. So that's Colt Express, the winner of the 2015 Spiel des Jahres. The Kennerspiel, which is the war that I'm usually most interested in because it's really more games that I want to play, is a bizarre choice in my opinion. I have not played this game. It's called Broom Service, and it's a pick-up-and-deliver game where you play as witches and wizards, and you're carrying around potions and magic wands and stuff and delivering them to places. And there's a lot of bluffing involved from what I can read, but I haven't tried it. It's a reimagining of an older game, but it beat out Orléans and Elysium, which were the other nominees in the Kennerspiel category. So that's my story of the week.
You just like it. You like it because of the pun, though. Broom Service. I mean, that's
pretty good.
Joke.
It's pretty good. Broom Service is pretty good. I like that. It's better than when Orléans.
When something like each year, do you try to collect all winners, or when do you decide to jump in on one of these games?
No, I mean, if a game is sort of up my alley, then I will, you know, be excited about it. I think it's interesting to see what, like last year, the winner was Camel Up, which is this racing game for the regular Spiel des Jahres. But the Kennerspiel was a game called Istanbul, which I talked about on the show. That game really sounded like something I would like, and it turned out to be something I did like a lot. So usually, you know, it highlights supposedly the best of the best, but oftentimes the games that I like the most aren't even nominated. So it's become a very controversial award in a lot of ways, because there's so few nominees and so many games that are very popular get ignored. And a lot of these games, like Machi Koro, came out in 2012. So it's in Japan, and it's, you know, it was nominated for the 2015 award. So there's a lot of weird rules, but it is a very prestigious award, and it has highlighted some of the best games of all time. A game that comes up a lot.
Like, go ahead.
What does it sound like? Up a lot on our show. People in the last few episodes have mentioned a lot. Hanabi was the 2012 winner of the Spiel des Jahres. So there's, you know, it's they pick good games most of the time.
I was going to say, it sounds like winning the award is the most dangerous game of all.
Yeah. All right, guys.
Colt Express sounds actually pretty cool, and it sounds like it might be a worthy winner. I don't know. That sounds like something that I'd like to play.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. If you see pictures of it, it's the kind of thing where you look, that's a board game. It looks more like a diorama than anything else. It's really cool. So let's take a second and thank our sponsor before we go any further, and that is Lynda. Lynda is, I'm just so glad that Lynda sponsors this show because I love learning. And Lynda is the perfect service for people who are curious, for people who are problem solvers, people who want to make things happen and learn new things. I think learning is pretty much my favorite thing to do in the world. And Lynda is a great platform for that. It's way better than just searching for things on YouTube. These are professionally made videos from experts in the field who know how to convey information concisely and clearly and do it in a professional way. So you're not searching for some random topic, finding some guy that's talking about a feature that's out of date on an old version of the software you're looking for. No, this is all the most up-to-date, always updated information that you want. It's all searchable because it's all transcribed. So you can search the keyword that you want and just go directly to that point in a video and just find the information that you need. And they have so many cool topics from photography, from video production, from just general life information. They've got great stuff on getting into video game design, sound design, like Rob does for a living. There's all kinds of great stuff on 3D Max, Maya. There's HTML5 classes. There's Unity classes. The list goes on and on and on. These are great classes. And if there's anything that you need to learn, I mean, even simple stuff like just learning how to do something specific in Excel, or you know, creating a web page, anything you might need to do, Lynda is there for you. And we're going to be there for you. If you give it a try, we're going to give you 10 days to check it out for free, for absolutely free. You get your run of the site, any of the videos you want to watch, you can watch for free. And all you have to do is go to lynda.com/DLC. That's LYNDA.com/DLC. You get a 10-day free trial. You can check out anything on the site and see if it's for you. And they know that you heard about it on our show, and that helps us out as well. So lynda.com with a Y, /DLC, lynda.com/DLC for your 10-day free trial. Check it out and learn something today. All right, guys. So, there really wasn't a ton of news this week. We hit on the big stuff. There was another game in a long list that was released and had problems that led to the publisher removing it from sale. That's Final Fantasy XIV on the Mac. Technical issues with regard to the game's system requirements. People, I guess they listed a lower system requirement than was actually required, and so people were having all kinds of problems, so they removed it from sale for the Mac. Issued an apology. They're issuing refunds. Square Enix is issuing refunds. We don't have to go into this. It's just another example of this trend. I'm curious your take, Rob, from behind the curtain, the other side of the table of inside the developer meeting room. Do you guys talk about this stuff? Is it a concern about delivering broken games? Is it this trend? Is that acknowledged inside companies like yours?
No one wants to deliver a broken game at all. I mean, it's that's never anyone's goal. And, you know, a lot of times these things happen, and I can only speak from my own experience. I can't speak to what happened with Final Fantasy. It seems like it was more or less a typo on system specs. But I know for places that I've worked, like, oftentimes we're playing these games, I don't know, thousands of times during development, and when we get closer to development, we have, tons and tons of QA people playing these games, and we can all play the game over and over and over again and still never experience every single bug or problem that an end user might experience. Games are so infinitely complicated now, and there's so many ways and factors that it can break. Things like, the age of your PS4, or like you have it in a cabinet and it's not well ventilated, and so it kind of gets a little overheated but not enough to break it, but enough to where it's affecting how the memory works. And I mean, there's so many factors that are like even outside of the control of game designers and companies that it's always a bummer to see this stuff because speaking again from my own experience, we try really hard to put out, you know, the best quality experience we possibly can day one, especially Naughty Dog. I mean, they're pretty darn good about it.
Yeah. Interesting comment sent in to dlcfeedback@gmail.com from listener Tim Casey. He says he's a diehard Nintendo fan. We were talking about Nintendo earlier. And he says he feels like everybody glosses over the fact that they are one of the few companies that consistently release high-quality and bug-free games. He feels like every week we're talking about companies releasing glitched games, but Nintendo never seems to get enough credit, having never done that in the history of its console. So why do you think that is? What do you think, Christian? Do we not give Nintendo enough credit for releasing games that are actually finished?
I think we give Nintendo the proper amount of credit for it. I mean, I think if you were to ask anyone that listens to this show if Nintendo games are of the highest quality, I think everybody kind of knows that. I don't know what else you can do to hold them up to even give them more credit for it. I think the glass half empty way to look at it is Nintendo games are oftentimes doing much less complex stuff in terms of their net code. There's no voice chat in Splatoon, Smash Brothers for Wii U and 3DS, or at least 3DS, I know for sure. The online was pretty broken for that. For me, I think it was about 2 weeks. So, I mean, even they have their hiccups, but they're also never at the forefront of technology. They're not releasing. Nintendo's never done Skyrim. So they've never had encountered that type of bug or that type of game that would be that vast. But like I said, I think pretty much everyone knows that if it's a Nintendo-made game, it's going to be of the highest quality. So I don't know what else you can do than say, good job, keep it up. Release more of them, maybe?
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's the trade-off, right, is that they can't release more of them if they're putting out games of that level of quality. I think that's the give and take you get is, yes, things are often delayed. Yes, things often don't come out in a timely fashion. Yes, there's only very few games coming out on their systems. But when those games do come out, they're done. They work, they're awesome, they're really high quality, and they're polished. So, you know, I think kudos to Nintendo, as Tim Casey points out. All right, guys, let's talk about the games we've been playing in a segment we like to call The Playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? You tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? You tell us on The Playlist. Rob, what's on your playlist this week?
So the thing I've been playing most of immediately, or like as in earlier this morning, Gotham Arkham Knight has been dominating my playlist. And I don't know, I think it's good, but I don't know if it's as good as everyone else thinks, I guess, kind of.
So no spoilers. Okay. How far into the story are you? If you can do it not spoilery. Or what does your percentage bar say, maybe?
I'm really not that far. I just finished, like, I'm a bit past Axis Chemicals, I guess, so.
Okay.
There's been a certain reveal, I guess you could say, that has happened.
I think that's a great hooking point for the game, and I think that there are several more with how it handles side quests and the main quest, and you know, I think at the more you play it, at least for me, the more I play it, the more and more I like it as you start to see what they're doing. And for me, the Batmobile, you get used to it. You learn how it handles. You learn, you know, for a game as big and as vast as the game that they're trying to make, I think I'm projecting my thoughts, of course, onto Rocksteady, but it serves as kind of a palate cleanser that allows them to make this larger, bigger game where you're not, you know, taking the same moment of awesome and repeating it for 20 hours. I think that's what they were looking to do by introducing the Batmobile. And then there are some really, really cool story moments in even some of the side quests, or I think the game really grows on you as you spend time in the city. That being said, as I talked about, I think it was last week, I don't think the game is perfect, but how it really works for me is just getting in and playing it and then kind of creating the suspension of disbelief that I know that this is a video game, and like the whole weird narrative that it's all one night and that you destroy this city and all of this stuff kind of being impossible. But once you detach, and I call it, you know, like enjoying a season of 24, if you're able to get into that mind frame of like, yeah, there's no way this is really 24 hours, but holy crap, this is fun and this game play is so tight, to me, that made it, you know, close to that 10 out of 10 tier for me.
Yeah, the in the chat room, we have Mr. Big saying, a week later, as bad as the Batmobile is, as insane as the side quests are, the story is so good, it overrides it. I can't remember a big AAA release like this where the thing that everybody keeps talking about is the story. Maybe GTA 5? Maybe GTA 5 is the last example of where the story really was the story. That, you know, nobody is talking, you know, even other Arkham games, it was never the story that took center stage as far as the most compelling part of the product. It was always the fighting system or the new things you can do as Batman or the fun detective mode and all that. All the mechanics is what Rocksteady had nailed. And I don't even think any of the Arkham games, the story is okay, but it kind of goes off the rails, certainly in the first one. I just think that's very impressive that the most compelling part of the game for people is this cool Batman story.
Have you finished the chemical plant, Jeff?
No.
So, no. Rob, I don't know how far you are, but what they do with that, I think, is one of the coolest things. And there's been slight similarities to stories told like that from that in comic books as well. But when that happened, again, I know I'm speaking vague. I'm sorry, everyone, but I think it's worth not spoiling. I mean, did that hit me? Like, that was awesome. Did that want to keep you going through the story?
Yeah, yeah. I think that moment was really, really pretty cool. And actually, as I've been playing, the way the story is sort of dribbled out, even encompassing the side missions, like, I really like how this world feels compared to other similar games. Like, rather than opening the minimap and seeing, oh, there's 80 bajillion things you do, you just kind of go towards the next story mission and maybe get distracted by something because you know there's other things you need to do, like rescue firefighters and, you know, solve a murder mystery, whatever it is. But I've really I know this is probably a cheesy way to say it, but I've organically come across most of these things and it feels really good. I really, really like that part of the game, like coming across a firefighter or one of the strung up bodies and having that detective moment. That stuff's awesome.
I mean, even if you select those missions, go into your, you know, mission selector and select the mission, it doesn't always give you a pinpoint of where it is. You know, Alfred will say something like, "Where there's smoke, there's fire," or, you know, we have new intel and the intel suggests that this person has been known to frequent this part of the city. But I think they do a really cool thing where it's their hashtag be the Batman. And then Jeff, to try to get you to play it more, get past that point. There was a point, again, no, I will not say what happened. This would be so vague, but I was playing late last night and one of, in my opinion, the coolest things I've ever seen in video games happened in a story mission that when it happened, and visually how they told it, not the thing itself, but visually how they told it and how they handled it in this world with your character in that moment, blew me away. Incredible. Wow. There are little moments like that Dang elevate it. This game past Asylum.
I don't want to. I'm trying to finish Witcher 3. I got lots of dailies to do.
I'll spoil it for you when we're done with the show if you like, but it's awesome.
No, I want to. It'd be fun, I think, for me to play it and then us to have an actual spoiler version on this show of us, you know, getting really into it. But I do want to point out that Z-Sync X. Yes, obviously I'm talking about what game has been lauded for its story. And he says, there's a naughty guy in the room. It's Last of Us. So yes, obviously that was the glaring one that I forgot to mention. a game that was definitely the story was what people were talking about. But I think it's cool that a Batman game is like that people are talking about the delivery of the story. I wish that was more the norm than the surprise that the mechanics are less interesting than are just a delivery device for this cool narrative, especially in these AAA, you know, start to finish narrative games. Rob, obviously you guys feel that way too. Naughty Dog, that's kind of sort of your trademark is, you know, Uncharted is like that. Last of Us is like that. It's all about creating a narrative and characters that are compelling and interesting start to finish.
Well, yeah, I mean, we have some of the best talents in terms of writing. Neil Druckmann is unbelievable. I mean, the dude's won 2 Writers Guild Awards for video games. Like, that's amazing. that's obviously a big focus here. So, yeah, I mean, I'm always pulled towards games that incorporate a lot of story like that. It's probably why I'm not into HOTS.
Rob, what's your favorite season in The Last of Us?
I like winter. I think winter is probably my favorite. But really, I think my entire favorite Last of Us anything is definitely the DLC Left Behind. I think that just nailed everything on like all cylinders. Everything that's good about that game that it has in a very small concentrated dose. So,
word, cool,
yeah.
So you guys feel like this? You know, they keep saying this Arkham game is the last Arkham game. It completes the story. Are you guys cool with that? Do you want to see more Arkham stuff, or do you want to see more Batman stuff? What? How do you feel about this completing the circle?
I think maybe once I beat the game, I'll have a better idea.
Yeah.
I am A-okay with it. It gives them freedom to do story things that I think they otherwise maybe wouldn't do because it would put them in a weird place. I like to think that this game story was envisioned as they were concepting and creating the story in City. If not, kudos to them to making it feel that way. And I love these Arkham games, but if there is another Batman game, I'm ready for something different. I'm ready for something lighter. Like, let's have something else fun, or let's have a Flash game that's like, you know, borrows heavily maybe from what's her name, the Light Girl in Infamous Second Son. I think is a shows how a Flash game could be done well.
Right. Neon Green, Lady,
yeah, a Green Arrow game. Like, there's so many other DC characters I would love to see. A Martian Manhunter. Oh, what a game, right? That'd be amazing. You could do anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, this game, yes, I'm A-okay with this being the last Arkham game.
You could give me that JLA game right after this, especially because this isn't really a spoiler, but there are gameplay mechanics when you have like another character like Nightwing or Catwoman or another person with you. And there's gameplay mechanics that I think are probably building blocks for a JLA game where you're doing combo attacks with other characters and things, and it's awesome.
I just want a new environment. I know I keep harping on that week after week, but I'm just so sick of nighttime in Gotham City. I really am. I just don't want to be there. That's why I don't want to fire it up. When I think of all the things I want to play, I want to be in the Witcher world, even though it's dreary and there's people hanging from nooses all over everywhere. I still like it because there's awesome sunsets and cool, you know, environments, and things change. Now I'm in the snow, and now I'm at the lake and all this cool stuff. And it just feels like it's more dark gothic-y Gotham. I don't know.
Well, spoiler alert, the last third of Arkham Knight, you're Bruce Wayne in the morning.
Bruce Wayne in the morning, just constantly waking up, just getting tea from Alfred. That's stretching. The entire last third.
It becomes Wii Fit. You just stretch and do your yoga and prepare.
I love it. Well, there was a big Heroes of the Storm release this week, and I'm going to talk about it. So if you don't want to hear me talk about Heroes of the Storm, too bad, or fast forward. But Eternal Conflict came out this week, and it's sort of this new initiative that Blizzard's doing with putting out a grouping of content around a theme that is one of their games. So, you know, Heroes of the Storm is a mishmash of mash-em-up of all of the Blizzard properties. This sort of expansion, I guess you could kind of term it, is themed around Diablo. So there's a new Diablo hero, the Butcher, and there's a new map. New maps come out much less frequently than new heroes. And this new map, I think, immediately vaulted to the top of my favorite maps in the game. It is a half heaven, half hell map from the Diablo universe. And you don't know which side you're going to start on, which is really cool. The art is spectacular, I think. It's such a beautiful map. And the central mechanic of the map is really, really cool. It leads to these very intense, very concentrated brawls in the center of the map that are – it feels like you're in this confined space with all this chaos happening around you. It's a much more intense brawl than I think any of the other maps engender, because there's just sort of fewer things to be doing at any given time. So basically, at a certain point in the match – two immortals, these giant you know, demon and angel will spawn at one of two random points across from each other in the center of the map. So it's sort of like a cross, if you imagine a plus sign, and at any of the ends of the points of the plus sign, these two immortals can spawn. And then they start sort of fighting each other. And then you, as a team, rush to the center, and you either attack the enemy's immortal or defend yours or sort of have a combination of the two. And it is just crazy because the immortals are laying down these things on the ground that will stun you if you stand in them, these little circles when they're smashing the ground. So you're having these big fights in the middle of this chaos that can cause stuns from the immortals themselves, and you're trying to defend your immortal and attack their immortal. It is so fun and so kinetic and so crazy. It's a really different feel than any of the other maps that are currently available. And they actually reduce the number of potential maps in both Quick Match and Hero League and Team League so that you actually get the Eternal Conflict map much more frequently. But I'm having a blast with it. I haven't really played too much of the Butcher Hero, but he has some really cool things. He can drive a stake into the ground and latch one of the enemy heroes to it, so you're kind of chained to one spot and a sitting duck for some of your teammates to attack. That's one of his big heroic abilities. His other is like creates this big flaming gust from the ground, this grate of fire that erupts beneath him, and he has a charging stun, so he can charge from a great distance away and hit an enemy and stun them. But he is an assassin, so he's real squishy and can go down really quick. But man, it's such really cool content. And they also introduced this new concept of these side quests that happen before the match even starts, where you can kill a little treasure goblin and get gold. So they're really doing some innovative, cool stuff as usual. And I still love the game with my whole heart, even though I know people are sick of hearing me talk about it.
But have you thought about singing about it?
Ooh, great idea. I love Heroes of the Storm. Yeah, something like that.
Rob, can you use any of that?
We might need to work on that a little bit more.
Damn it, Nate.
Oh. Let's transition now to a new segment I'm calling Q's and A's. Again, we're doing much more listener involvement, or at least we're trying to, because I think that's what you guys would like to hear. It's certainly something we would like very much. Got a cool Q. This week's Q comes from Colin. He says that he loves the podcast, and he's curious what our opinions are on comedy in gaming. How do you think comedy is better executed? Dialogue, a la Double Fine's games, Borderlands, and Portal? Or environmental comedy like the worlds of Fallout or Sunset Overdrive? Also, do you think a AAA comedy game that has an original IP could ever exist in the gaming space today? Also, he wants Christian to come to Portland, Oregon and perform live comedy for him. So get on that, Christian.
I'll do a house show just for you. Let me know.
Rob, the Uncharted games always have wry quips. They're packed full of clever writing, but I don't think anybody would call them comedy per se. Mm-hmm. What do you think about comedy in gaming? Do you want more of it?
I feel like that's such a hard game, but I feel like Telltale is definitely kind of the studio to do it if there was one. I definitely think in games it's got to be dialogue driven. I don't know how you make a game out of it, though, aside from making it like sort of a choose your own adventure sort of thing.
Well, lots of comments in the chat room. There's Mr. Big said, did anyone play Massive Chalice, which I did and I talked about on the show extensively. I really love that game. Very funny dialogue. But again, it's sort of just voiceover jokes, which is certainly a way to go. ZSync X says comedy is better told through mechanics when possible, which I'm surprised to hear, because I think the way we get them now mostly is in those sort of VO moments. Like, I think Portal is a great example of really, really genuinely funny moments that are just kind of a side dialogue that's going on that doesn't really affect what you're doing. But there used to be true comedies, true genre comedies in gaming back when there were point-and-click adventure games. The Space Quest games and the Leisure Suit Larry games, made by the two guys from Andromeda for Space Quest, those were genuinely trying to be the equivalent of a movie comedy in the video game space. But we don't really have that anymore, although King's Quest is coming, so maybe that will be more like that. What do you think, Christian?
Well, South Park, I think, is one of the best recent examples. Stick of Truth and now Butthole Fractured or whatever. They're clever. I mean, they have a joke in the name, right? And I think to say, oh, well, now it just comes across in the VO. Fractured Butthole. It used to come across, or now it's only really in VO, but we used to have it in these text-based adventures, this whole comedy genre as well. Those text-based adventures just had it in the quote-unquote VO too. It's just the technology for those video games didn't have VO, right? I mean, there weren't funny mechanics in those games. It was pointing and clicking. I think the hard part about successfully really nailing comedy in games is that so much of comedy, in my opinion, is timing. And so kind of like Rob was talking about for the Jeep, where they need to have the sound going for as the player is revving the engine and doing this, that, or the other, and it's not just a drive-by or a pull-up or whatever, is in comedy, if let's say you make Half-Life 2 the comedy, and in the middle of someone's speech, you as Gordon Freeman walk away and you miss the punchline, you're like, well, that wasn't funny. Or you get bored because you want to skip the cutscene because you want to go do whatever the thing is that you're doing, or you look away for a minute and you miss the setup and the punchline doesn't make sense. But I think games are doing it, and I think people unfairly overlook the comedy in games. Double Fine has been doing a great job. Telltale does a good job. South Park is phenomenal. Uncharted has funny, you know, quips and moments, and where it goes for, I think it's going for the type of comedy it's going for. It is kind of dad jokey at times. Last of Us had a dumb joke book in it, and the comedy, in my opinion, came from Joel's reaction to those comedy jokes, those jokey jokes at dark moments. Portal was certainly very funny. And in terms of like mechanics or Fallout or Sunset Overdrive, I'm sorry, like background jokes being in games, that again is the hard part about that is seeing that at the right moment. I feel like that is, I think it was a Splitsider article, which if you don't, it's a comedy website talking about the rise of, I forget what they called it, but it's like reference comedy. And those types of jokes only work typically if you know what it is, right? Like if you were real into the Warped Tour, growing up in the 90s and early 2000s, I bet a lot of the stuff in Sunset Overdrive hit home for you. If you were never part of that scene, I don't think you saw a lot of that as funny and it was just grating. Or if you're playing The Simpsons, what's the donut game that they have? If you're not a big fan of The Simpsons, a hardcore fan of The Simpsons, a lot of those jokes go over your head. So it's this real, it's delicate, whereas shooting something or completing a puzzle is the same to everyone. Comedy is always subjective, except for the fact that you should buy my comedy album on iTunes.
I take issue with you about saying that the stuff you were doing in Space Quest or Leisure Suit Larry or whatchamacallit, the pirate game. My God, my brain doesn't work. Monkey Island.
Yeah.
That was just sort of the equivalent of just voiceover. I mean, I think what you were doing in those games, what your character was doing was funny, was legitimately funny. The dialogue certainly was funny, but you were actually, you know, in the old Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy game, I had to stick a babelfish in my ear, right? In Leisure Suit Larry, I had to go buy a prophylactic from a convenience store, and it was an awkward moment that I had to do as a character in the game. In Space Quest, I was doing all kinds of wacky, weird things. They were clearly comic genre games. They weren't action games that had, you know, comedic voiceover. Somebody in the chat room brought up one of my favorite game series of all time, which is No One Lives Forever. Those games were beautifully funny, really wonderfully funny. But most of the time it was because you were sneaking up in a first-person shooter and you could overhear the henchmen having a ridiculous conversation. I just sit there for 10 minutes listening to henchmen because it was so well written and so well delivered. But the game itself wasn't necessarily a comedy. It was an action game that had comedic voiceover. And I think there is room to mine actual comedic genre games, and they don't necessarily have to be adventure games. I think there's a way to, you know, Octodad is something else somebody in the chat room brought up. That's a game that the premise itself is ridiculous. The premise itself is comedic. I think there's room for that. I don't think everything we do has to be grim and actiony and or even actiony and flip. You know, it doesn't have to just be comedic because our hero is clever. Although I love that. You know, I love that in Uncharted and other games where our hero is fun to be around. That makes those action games more palatable and much more entertaining for me. But I would love to see games where the central mechanic of what you're doing is funny. You are creating humor by your interaction. I would like to see that embraced more often. It, as you say, Christian, it's hard to do. It's not easy because comedy's hard. But what's the old quote? Dying is easy, comedy is hard. Yeah. What do you think, Rob? Are you...
Would you like to
see more games like that?
Yeah, I definitely would. But I think you bring up a good point with Octodad. It also sparks memory like I Am Bread and Surgeon Simulator. Like, those are definitely funny based totally purely on mechanics because they're so ridiculous.
Or goat, what's the goat game? Goat Simulator?
Goat Simulator, yeah.
Yeah.
So there's definitely room, and it's funny because I almost get more joy watching somebody else play those. It's almost like games used as a prop in a way, like watching a Twitch streamer or YouTuber playing I Am Bread and getting, you know, screaming mad at the controls as he rolls his piece of bread through ants and glass and things and up cabinet walls and things. That's certainly something I think that's valid. It's like a lot of these games can be used for comedy, but like through someone else's interpretation.
I think if the cue from Colin is about comedy and gaming, I think the A that we've come up with is that there's a lot of comic games. They're right now being made. I think we came up with this great list of really funny games from South Park to I Am Bread that are being put out right now and are genuinely funny. Somebody else in the chat room brought up the Saints Row games. Certainly not my sense of humor, but for others, it was very funny. I mean, I guess there were some parts that made me laugh in Saints Row. Driving my cart with some crazy dude pulling it with full-on S&M garb while I'm throwing firecrackers and trying to drive my convertible with a white tiger in the background or in the back where I had to pet the tiger as I was driving. I guess those are some funny comedic concepts too. So there are, and Broforce, another one. So people are coming up with a great list of comedic games. I guess it's not as underrepresented as maybe we might at first blush think. But thanks for the question, Colin. And again, you can send in your questions, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right, dudes, let's carve out a little bit of tabletop time.
Right now.
Time. Rob Kreckle, I know that you are a board gamer because I have board gamed with you in the past. So what board game would you like to talk about?
So Carcassonne is a favorite of mine, and it's one of the only like non-American board games that I own personally. We don't have a ton of space in my house, and my wife is not super into board games, but I did get her to play Carcassonne, and she really, really enjoyed it. And so occasionally we pull that out, and we just did recently when we had a little time over the weekend, and we played a couple rounds. It's a classic. It's really good. We have like the basic edition, so it doesn't have any of the crazy expansions. It's just sort of the core. It's a really good game that I always enjoy no matter what platform, like the actual physical, you know, on the table, but also the iPhone app version or the Xbox Live version, they're all good.
Yeah, I think that certainly if you were going to make a Mount Rushmore of designer board games, Carcassonne would be on it, with, you know, Settlers of Catan and a few others. It is a massive hit. It's a game that is available everywhere. You can get that game at like Toys R Us and Target and places that you can't really find other designer board games. And like you said, it's got myriad expansions. There are so many different versions of Carcassonne to be had. But the base game is really, really fun. You're laying down those tiles. You're creating your little tableau of city that's interconnected and placing your people on it in interesting ways. It also has a really excellent iPad edition if anybody has the desire to try it but don't want to, you know, invest in the board game or have a place to set up the board game. You can get it for your iPad, I think on Android as well, although I'm not certain. And it's a really, really well done implementation of Carcassonne, which is a great one. Have you ever tried that one, Christian? Have you ever played Carcassonne?
I have, but it's many years ago. My little brother is a big fan.
Yeah. Great game.
Carcassonne. I feel like it scales well, too. Like, you can play it two-player, but you can also play it with more, much more than that, depending on how many of the expansions you have.
Yes. Yes, I agree. I had a chance to play a new game from Tasty Minstrel Games this week. It's relatively new. It came out last year. New to me, certainly. It's called Flip City, and it's another in these this trend that's been happening the last couple years of these real small micro games that are affordable and really portable and easy to bring out anywhere, which is one of the reasons why I'm so jazzed about it. This is kind of miniature Sim City, I guess. But, it has this Sim City theme. It's not super strong. It's more like a really accessible deck-building game. So deck-building games became popular several years ago after the release of Dominion, which was the first deck-building game. Which isn't the same as sort of building your deck in a trading card game like Magic the Gathering or something. This is a game. These are games where you actually build your deck through the course of playing the game rather than before the game starts. And in games like Dominion, where you're deck building through the action of the game, most of the time you build your hand or you build your deck, and then you draw a hand from that deck. And then you decide what to do by looking at your hand and playing cards out of your hand and trying to buy other cards to put into your deck using the in-game mechanics. And so, change the constitution of your deck to make it more favorable to you. Well, Flip City kind of removes all the decision-making of looking at your hand in favor of making it much more simple and much more accessible, in my opinion. It replaces that decision-making with a sort of push-your-luck decision-making. So you have this hand of city buildings, and you're playing them down in front of you to create your little city tableau in front of you. And they're double-sided, so certain buildings can transform into other buildings by paying a fee, by flipping them. But you have your deck of cards in your hand, and you're not able to look at them. You're only able to decide whether to play the card on top or not. You can play the card on top in front of you into your city tableau for free, but but once you play it, that's the only card that you can play is the next one on top. So you're constantly deciding, am I going to keep going? Because certain cards have little unhappy faces, which represent the unhappiness of the people in your city. And once you have too many cards in front of you that are unhappy, then you bust and everything you've played that round gets eliminated, gets pushed off into your discard pile, and you don't get any of the benefits of having played it. So it's this constant push and pull, this push your luck of there are certain cards that if they come up on the top of your deck, they force you to play them and they have unhappiness. So you're constantly testing yourself, well, can I keep going, or is the next card going to be the one that has unhappiness and it forces me to play and then it causes me to bust? And you're buying cards that are from the central store so you can, add more buildings into your deck and change your constitution. And then also deciding whether or not you want to pay to flip cards onto a more powerful side or flip them back to create some sort of effect. It's really fun. I played it two players with my wife. She liked it. I liked it. It's very accessible. It's the kind of game that's easy to explain, and it streamlines that deck building process because, again, your only decision at any given time when you're playing from your hand is, am I going to play this one card or am I not? Am I going to stop? And then once you stop, you can, count up how many dollars you've got and whether you want to spend that on new buildings or you want to spend that on flipping buildings to a more powerful side. It's called Flip City. Go ahead.
I got anxious listening to you describe that, though. Like, that to me, I don't know. It's weird because video games feel that way too sometimes. What is it? Like decision paralysis or whatever? Where like,
paralysis. Yeah.
Yeah. How, what's your strategy? Like, how would you quickly play this game? I would sit there and be like, oh, crap. Nah. I mean, or my flip side of that is the way I deal with it is just, well, who cares? Like, I'm screwed either way. Gonna do this one. Doesn't matter. Nothing matters. The answer is B. Here we go.
Well, I think there's a lot of people who play these push-your-luck games. There's a lot of really cool push-your-luck games. One of my favorites is a game called Ink and Gold, which is a game where you keep going deeper and deeper into this cavern trying to get more stuff before you have to back out. And you keep going, well, I hope I don't hit a monster. Hope I don't hit a monster. Oh, there's really cool stuff. I can get more stuff. And then it's the kind of game where I tend to almost always push my luck too far and bust. But I think the mechanics of Flip City are different because even when you haven't busted yet and you've only done a few things, you still get cool stuff. It's not you can still change the constitution of your deck so that it reduces the potential of you busting, and you really end up getting pretty powerful by the end of the game with a very big, robust deck. And there's so few components to this game, it makes it really portable and really easy to play. So I totally understand your worry there, and it's certainly the hook for these kinds of games is feeling like, oh my god, I'm totally gonna bust. I might as well just keep pushing it until it happens. But it's I think this one mitigates that problem a little bit, because even when you put down just one card and it's $1, you can flip one of the cards that forces you to put it down. You can flip that over to its other side by just paying $1, and now it's become a new card that doesn't force you to do that. So, you know, even when you have only done a few things on your turn, you still have a lot of options. It's cool.
Cool.
So again, that's called Flip City, and it is from Tasty Minstrel Games, and it's pretty inexpensive. I think it's less than $20, and it can play 1 to 4 players. You can play it solo. You can play it as a solitaire game if you want. I haven't tried it like that, but it's one of those games that went over well with my wife. I think Rob, you and I were. You were mentioning that too. Like, a lot of the determining factor on whether I'm going to buy something is like, is my wife going to dig this? Because yeah. I'm not around enough people to play things. I'm around her all the time.
And if you want to play board games, it better be something that she's into.
Exactly. It makes me be able to play it more often. So I'm digging Flip City. All right. Let's move on. We got a parting gift coming up that's going to keep you occupied into next week. But before that, I want to thank Rob for stepping in and being awesome on this episode. We love having you, dude. Where can people keep up with your stuff this week?
Dude, I no problem at all. I'm very excited that I finally got to be on the show. You can keep up with me on Twitter. It's probably the best place. It's at Rob Krekel, RobKrekel. Keep it locked for more Uncharted 4 stuff, and hopefully everyone enjoys it.
What did you guys think of the reveal of the full trailer? Were you guys kind of sitting around during that Twitch seeing the reaction of people, or it must have been very, very positive moment at the studio?
Oh yeah, I mean, we all were so excited for people to see it and see it on the floor at E3 itself. Like, we just wanted everyone to see it right away, you know, like. We just are excited to show people what we're working on, and we can't wait to show people more, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I was so impressed with that. I can't wait for that game now, man. As I kept saying to everybody who would listen, it's one of the best action sequences I've ever seen. And I just can't wait to see more of the game. It's so good.
Well, I guess you can Christian. Help. You can wait by playing Uncharted 1, 2, and 3 Remastered coming out this summer for the PlayStation 4.
That's right.
Hear all those glorious sounds on your PS4 that Rob worked on in the previous games.
Oh, what a tease. Oh, I'm going to buy that. Dang it. Sorry, you had a question, Jeff. Sorry, I wasn't about to ping.
I was saying, what are you up to this week, Mr. Spicer?
Oh, this week is Improv versus Stand-Up Thursday at UCB if you are in Los Angeles. Also coming up, I think the ticketing link just went live, but a show I'm super excited for, July 28th at Nerd Melt in Los Angeles. The wonderful people over there, they do this show called An Evening With, and they said, hey, we want to do an evening with you, Christian. And to me, the best evening is an evening with friends and awesome, awesome people. So it is myself, one Jeff Cannata, and one Anthony Carboni.
That's me.
Mm-hmm. Doing another live, We Have Concerns. Then Kyle Kinane is going to be there. Dean Del Rey and Brenton Biddlecombe, and it's July 28th at Nerd Melt. It's going to be awesome. And Portland, no, but I will be in Seattle at the Comedy Underground around PAX. So that's only a 2-hour drive, right? You can do that drive. It's easy. It's easy. And
that's like Portland before there was Portland. That's like
it's pre-Portland. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, sir? You still have concerns about things?
I do, man. I'm very excited about that July 28th show that people can come to. What's the door fee for that?
It's like $5 or something really cheap. It's all ages.
Awesome.
And yeah, it should be fun.
All ages. So are we supposed to be on our best behavior?
No, you can do whatever you want. I'm saying like a lot of comedy clubs are 21 and up. This is 18, 15, you know, whatever. But no. Yeah. Also, the rival slogan for your show, We Have Concerns, is Team Dad Jokes or No Dad Jokes. Like, I listened to enough of the show to know that you guys could get as dirty as you want to be and you'd still be PG-13.
Is that so? I feel like we drop F-bombs way often in that show, way more often than we should.
But. Inside scoop.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I hope people that listen to this show will check us out there. I don't know if I should say anything yet because it's certainly not official, but we submitted a panel for PAX, for DLC, and for We Have Concerns. So hopefully we'll hear soon about whether we can do that. I hope people would be interested in seeing us live with a DLC panel at PAX. We submitted one, so crossing our fingers that will happen. But yeah, come out July 28th if you're in the LA area. Come see us. It was a really fun. We've only done one live show previously, and it was really, really fun. So check that out. Or listen to the show normally. That's at wehaveconcerns.com. We also have the / Filmcast doing / Filmcast stuff. We're going to talk about Terminator Genesis tonight, so that should be up tomorrow. And then we're going to – huh? You laughing?
About yeah, sorry.
I liked it. I liked it.
And you hated – okay. Go ahead.
I liked it.
Go ahead.
It's not the best movie ever, but I liked it. Hear more of my thoughts, /filmcast.com. Also, you can follow me at Jeff Cannata on the Twitters. And I have a big announcement coming as my parting gift. Big announcement! Woo! So that'll be fun. Let's get to that now. Guys, it's parting gift time. Hey, give us a suggestion. Rob, do you have a suggestion to get folks through their week?
I do. A pretty new comic book that actually my best friend in the world, Frank Barbieri, writes. It's called Broken World. It's from Boom Studios. It just started. They're on issue 2 as of this Wednesday. And the brief synopsis is basically that it's the end of the world. We know an extinction level event is going to happen. Basically, a meteor is days away from impacting Earth. And basically, everyone on the planet has been more or less cleared to leave, on these government escape pods, except for this one woman. Her family's been cleared, but she has been denied due to some shadiness in her past. And the comic is all about her sort of like need, desire, and, trying to find the ways to fake her way in order to leave with her family. It's pretty awesome. The art is beautiful. It's done by Christopher Peterson. And it's just a cool comic with a great concept. And Frank's, like, aside from being one of my best friends, he's like one of the hottest writers in comics right now. He's writing Howling Commandos for Marvel's new launch. He writes his own creator-owned book on Image called Five Ghosts. And Broken World is one of his new books. So jump on board when it's early.
Awesome. That does sound cool. Christian, what about you? What do you got?
Keeping the comic train rolling, I threw out some Batman graphic novels last week. This week, I look at it every time I sit in here and do the show, and I don't know how to say the name right. Is it Taschen? T-A-S-C-H-E-N? They do incredible big, and I mean big books. It's an awesome DC one. But they have a 75 years of Marvel book out more recently. It's written by Roy Thomas, and he was a editor in chief, I think, in the 70s, and an editor for longer, so well versed in the subject. I mean, this book is huge, and it's really, really great. Awkward as heck to read, but if you're a Marvel zombie, it's worth checking out. Also, it's expensive. I received it as a gift, and it was a great gift. So maybe hint at that if you have a birthday coming up and you're a Marvel zombie. It's beautiful and really cool, and it is 75 years of Marvel.
Speaking of comics, I'll keep the comics train rolling on. Guess what, guys? I'm hosting a panel at San Diego Comic-Con. This is the week of San Diego Comic-Con. This weekend, San Diego Comic-Con, I'm hosting a panel. I'm hosting the Marvel Heroes panel. So I would love people to come out and say hi. If you're going to be at Comic-Con and you're interested in the Marvel Heroes video game, or you just want to come and say hi to me, I will be there hosting the panel. I'll hang out afterwards and say hi to anybody that wants to come up and do so. I'm really excited about it. The folks at Gazillion asked me to host their panel, and I'm thrilled to be doing it. So come check it out. It's Friday night of Comic-Con at 6 p.m., I believe, but you should check your schedule because I'm not the official word on things, but check your schedule for the Marvel Heroes panel. I believe my name should be there in the description, but either way, or follow me on Twitter. I'll be tweeting about it as well. But it should be really fun. I think their whole design team is going to be there talking about stuff and revealing new cool things for that free-to-play Diablo-style loot game called Marvel Heroes. So I hope to see you guys at San Diego Comic-Con. I'm tired already just thinking about it. Comic-Con is tiring, but I'm excited. I'll be there. Next week, I think we're going to have Andrea Renee on. She's going to be at Comic-Con as well. We'll be talking a little Comic-Con stuff. But I also want to say thank you to everybody that responded and went to our subreddit over there at 5x5dlc.reddit.com and checked out our official thread for guest suggestions. We're trying to start a new initiative of having a bunch of folks on that have never been on before. So we're trying to expand our roster this week. Of course, Rob's first appearance. We're excited about that. But we're going to have more unique, interesting guests, and a lot of those are coming from your suggestions. So keep them coming. I think we're going to have some really cool guests in the upcoming weeks, some cool surprises of people who have already responded positively. So that's very exciting for us. Thank you guys for all your support. Thanks to all the folks in the chat room. Thanks to Rob Krekel and Christian Spicer. Thanks to all the folks at 5x5. And thanks to you for listening. We really appreciate it. Why not give us a little review on the iTunes? That helps out. 5 stars is always appreciated on your method of listening choice. We'll see you next week, guys. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.